Chapter 28. Touching the Buddha Within. In 1968, I was in India with Samdech Maha Goshananda, a leader of Cambodian Buddhism, and Sister Chan Kang, my dear student, friend, and colleague. For several days, we sat together on Vulture Peak until sunset, and I realized that in former times, the Buddha had looked at the same setting sun with the same eyes. Afterwards, we walked down the mountain slowly and mindfully, not saying a word. And since that day, I have continued to walk in the same way. Vulture Peak is beautiful, and Europe, Asia, Africa, Australia, North and South America are also beautiful. When there is mist on the mountains, it is beautiful. And when there is no mist, it is also beautiful. All four seasons are beautiful. You are beautiful, and your friends are beautiful. There is nothing to stop you from being in touch with life in the present moment. The question is, do you have eyes that can see the sunset? Feet that can touch the earth? If the Buddha were to transmit his eyes to you, would you know how to use them? Don't think that happiness will be possible only when conditions around you become perfect. Happiness lies in your own heart. You only need to practice mindful breathing for a few seconds, and you'll be happy right away. Confucius said, "What greater joy can there be than putting into practice what you have learned?" Sometimes we feel as though we are drowning in the ocean of suffering, carrying the burden of all social injustice of all times. The Buddha said, "When a wise person suffers, she asks herself, 'What can I do to be free from this suffering? Who can help me? What have I done to free myself from this suffering?' But when a foolish person suffers, she asks herself, 'Who has wronged me? How can I show others that I am the victim of wrongdoing? How can I punish those who have caused my suffering?' Why is it that others who have been exposed to the same conditions do not seem to suffer as much as we do? You might like to write down the first set of questions and read them every time you are caught in your suffering. Of course, you have the right to suffer, but as a practitioner, you do not have the right not to practice. We all need to be understood and loved, but the practice is not merely to expect understanding and love. It is to practice understanding and love. Please don't complain when no one seems to love or understand you. Make the effort to understand and love them better. If someone has betrayed you, ask why. If you feel that the responsibility lies entirely with them, look more deeply. Perhaps you have watered the seed of betrayal in her. Perhaps you have lived in a way that has encouraged her to withdraw. We are all co-responsible. And if you hold on to the attitude of blame, the situation will only get worse. If you can learn how to water the seed of loyalty in her, that seed may flower again. Look deeply into the nature of your suffering so you will know what to do and what not to do to restore the relationship. Apply your mindfulness, concentration, and insight, and you will know what nourishes you and what nourishes her. Practice the first noble truth, identifying your suffering. The second noble truth, seeing its sources, and the third and fourth noble truths, finding ways to transform your suffering and realize peace. The four noble truths and the noble eightfold path are not theories, they are ways of action. We begin the practice by seeking meaning for our life. We know that we don't want to run after fame, money, or sensual pleasure, and so we learn the art of mindful living. In time, we develop some understanding and compassion, and we find that these are the energies we can use to alleviate our suffering and the suffering of others. This already gives some meaning to our life. We continue the practice, looking deeply into the five aggregates that comprise the self, and we touch the reality of no birth and no death that is in us and in everything. This touching brings us the greatest relief. It removes all of our fears, offers us true freedom, and gives real meaning to our life. We need places where we can go to sit, breathe quietly, and look and listen deeply. When we have difficulties at home, we need a room like that where we can take refuge. We also need parks and other peaceful places where we can practice walking meditation alone and with others. Educators, architects, artists, legislators, businessmen, all of us have to come together to create spaces where we can practice peace, harmony, joy, and deep. There is so much violence in our schools. Parents, teachers, and students need to work together to transform the violence. Schools are not just places for transmitting technical know-how. They must also be places where children can learn to be happy, loving, and understanding, where teachers nourish their students with their own insights and happiness. We also need places in hospitals where family members, healthcare workers, patients, and others can sit, breathe, and calm themselves. We need city halls where responsible people can look deeply into local problems. We need Congress to be a place where our real problems are truly addressed. If you are an educator, a parent, a teacher, an architect, a healthcare worker, a politician, or a writer, please help us create the kinds of institutions we need for our collective awakening. Our legislators need to know how to calm themselves and communicate well. They need to know how to listen and look deeply and to use loving speech. If we elect unhappy people who don't have the capacity to make their own families happy, how can we expect them to make our city or our nation happy? Don't vote for someone just because he or she is handsome or has a lovely voice. We are entrusting the fate of our city, our nation, and our lives to such people. We have to act responsibly. We need to create communities of deep looking, deep sharing, and real harmony. We need to be able to make the best kinds of decisions together. We need peace within and without. The heart of the Buddha is in each of us. When we are mindful, the Buddha is there. I know a 4-year-old boy who, whenever he is upset, stops what he is doing, breathes mindfully, and tells his mommy and daddy, "I am touching the Buddha within." We need to take care of the healthy seeds that are in us by watering them every day through the practice of mindful breathing, mindful walking, mindfully doing everything. We need to touch the Buddha within us. We need to enter our own heart, which means to enter the heart of the Buddha. To enter the heart of the Buddha means to be present for ourselves, our suffering, our joys, and for many others. To enter the heart of the Buddha means to touch the world of no birth and no death, the world where water and wave are one. When we begin the practice, we bring our suffering and our habit energies with us, not just those of 20 or 30 years, but the habit energies of all our ancestors. Through the practice of mindful living, we learn new habits. Walking, we know that we are walking. Standing, we know that we are standing. Sitting, we know that we are sitting. Practicing this way, we slowly undo our old habits and develop the new habit of dwelling deeply and happily in the present moment. With mindfulness in us, we can smile a smile that proves our transformation. The heart of the Buddha has been touched by our being wonderfully together. Please practice as an individual, a family, a city, a nation, and a worldwide community. Please take good care of the happiness of everyone around you. Enjoy your breathing, your smiling, your shining the light of mindfulness on each thing you do. Please practice transformation at the base through deep looking and deep touching. The teachings of the Buddha on transformation and healing are very deep. They are not theoretical. They can be practiced every day. Please, practice them and realize them. I am confident that you can do it. Part 4. Discourses. Discourse on Turning the Wheel of the Dharma. Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. This is what I have heard. At one time, the world-honored one was staying near Varanasi at Isipatana in the Deer Park. At that time, the world-honored one addressed the group of five monks, saying, "Bhikkhus, there are two extremes that a monk should avoid. What are the two? The first is the devotion to sensual desire and the pleasure resulting from sensual desire. Such devotion is base, pedestrian, worldly, ignoble, and unbeneficial. The second is devotion to harsh austerity. Such devotion is painful, ignoble, and unbeneficial. By not following either of these extremes, the Tathagata has realized the middle way that gives rise to seeing and understanding. This seeing and understanding are at the basis of peace, knowledge, full awakening, and nirvana. What is the middle way, Bhikkhus, that the Tathagata has realized that gives rise to seeing and understanding, when that seeing and understanding are at the basis of peace, knowledge, full awakening, and nirvana? It is the Noble Eightfold Path, consisting of right view, right thinking, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right diligence, right mindfulness, and right concentration. This is the middle way, Bhikkhus, that the Tathagata has realized that gives rise to seeing and understanding, when that seeing and understanding are at the basis of peace, knowledge, full awakening, and nirvana. Here, Bhikkhus, is the noble truth of suffering. Birth is suffering. Old age is suffering. Sickness is suffering. Death is suffering. Sorrow, grief, mental anguish, and disturbance are suffering. To be with those you dislike is suffering. To be separated from those you love is suffering. Not having what you long for is suffering. In other words, to grasp the five aggregates as though they constitute a self is suffering. Here, Bhikkhus, is the noble truth of the cause of suffering. It is the desire to be born again, delight in being born again, attached to the pleasures found in this and that. There is the craving for sense pleasures, for becoming, and for not becoming anymore. Here, Bhikkhus, is the noble truth of ending suffering. It is the fading away and ending of craving without any trace. It is giving up, letting go of, being free from, and doing away with craving. Here, Bhikkhus, is the noble truth of the path that leads to the end of suffering. It is the Noble Eightfold Path of right view, right thinking, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right diligence, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Monks, when I realized the noble truth of suffering, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized that the noble truth of suffering needs to be understood, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized that the noble truth of suffering has been understood, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized the noble truth of the causes of suffering, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized that the causes of suffering need to be given up, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. when I realized that the causes of suffering have been given up. Seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized the noble truth of ending suffering, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized that the ending of suffering needs to be experienced, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized that the ending of suffering has been experienced, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized the noble truth of the path that leads to the end of suffering, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized that the path that leads to the end of suffering needs to be practiced, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. When I realized that the path that leads to the end of suffering has been practiced, seeing, understanding, insight, wisdom, and light arose in me with regard to things I had not heard before. As long as insight and understanding of the Four Noble Truths in their three stages and 12 aspects, just as they are, had not been realized, I could not say that in the world with its gods, Maras, Brahmas, recluses, Brahmins, and humans, someone had realized the highest awakening. Monks, as soon as insight and understanding of the Four Noble Truths in their three stages and 12 aspects, just as they are, had been realized, I could say that in this world, with its gods, Maras, Brahmas, recluses, Brahmins, and humans, someone had realized the highest awakening, that understanding and seeing have arisen, that the liberation of my mind is unshakable, that this is my last birth, that there is no more becoming. When the world-honored one had spoken, the five monks rejoiced in their hearts. Upon hearing the Four Noble Truths, the pure eye that sees the meaning of the teachings without attachment arose in the monk Kondanya. He realized that everything that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. When the Dharma wheel had thus been turned by the world-honored one, the earth gods proclaimed, near Varanasi at Isipatana in the Deer Park, the highest wheel of the Dharma has been set in motion. It cannot be turned back by recluses, Brahmins, gods, Maras, Brahmas, or anyone in any world. When the four kings heard the earth gods' proclamation, they proclaimed, near Varanasi at Isipatana in the Deer Park, the highest wheel of the Dharma has been set in motion. It cannot be turned back by recluses, Brahmins, gods, Maras, Brahmas, or anyone in any world. When the gods of the 33rd heaven, the gods of the realm of the dead, the Tushita gods, the gods who rejoice in creation, the gods who have power through control of others, and the gods in the company of Brahma heard the four kings' proclamation. They proclaimed, near Varanasi at Isipatana in the Deer Park, the highest wheel of the Dharma has been set in motion. It cannot be turned back by recluses, Brahmins, gods, Maras, Brahmas, or anyone in any world. At that hour, at that moment, in an instant of time, the proclamation reached the world of Brahma, and the 10,000 world systems shook and shook again. An immeasurable splendor was seen throughout the world, surpassing the splendor of all the gods. Inspired, the world-honored one spoke, indeed, Kondanya has understood. Indeed, Kondanya has understood. Thus, Kondanya received the name Kondanya who understands. Samyutta Nikaya 5, 420. Discourse on the Great 40. Mahachatarisika Sutta. This is what I have heard. At one time the Lord was staying near Savati in the Jeta Grove in Anathapindika's park. At that time, the world-honored one addressed the bhikkhus, saying, "O bhikkhus." "O teacher," the bhikkhus respectfully replied. The world-honored one said, "Bhikkhus, I am going to teach you about the noble right concentration. What are its causes and what are its accompanying factors? Please listen carefully and give all your attention as I speak." "Yes, Lord," the bhikkhus respectfully replied. The world-honored one spoke, "What, bhikkhus, are the causes and accompanying factors that adorn right concentration?" "They are right view, right thinking, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right diligence, and right mindfulness. When one pointedness of mind is accompanied by these seven factors, it is called the noble right concentration, adorned with its causes and accompanying factors. In the following example, right view comes first. Why does right view come first? When there is wrong view and one knows it is wrong view, it is already right view. When there is right view and one knows it is right view, that is also right view. What is wrong view? It is the view that there is no point in giving alms, offering alms, or ceremonial offerings, that there is no ripening of the fruit of wholesome or unwholesome actions, that this world does not exist and neither does the other world, that there is no birth from parents and no beings are born spontaneously, that no monks or Brahmins have perfected the path, are going in the right direction, have experienced for themselves the special understandings, or are able to illuminate our understanding of this world or the other world. What, bhikkhus, is right view? Bhikkhus, there are two kinds of right view. There is right view in which not all the leaks have been stopped. It gives rise to merit, but still results in attachment. Then there is right view that is noble, in which the leaks have been stopped. It is supramundane and an element of the path. What is right view in which not all the leaks have been stopped? It is the view that there is a point in giving alms, offering alms, and ceremonial offerings, that there is ripening of the fruit of wholesome and unwholesome actions, that this world exists and so does the other world, that there is birth from parents and there are beings who are born spontaneously, that monks and Brahmins have perfected the path, are going in the right direction, have experienced for themselves the special understandings, and are able to illuminate our understanding of this world or the other world. What is right view in which the leaks have been stopped? It is understanding. Understanding is one of the five faculties. Understanding as one of the five powers. Understanding as the enlightenment factor called investigation of phenomena in someone whose mind is noble, whose mind has no leaks, who has been provided with the noble path, and who is practicing the noble path. That, bhikkhus, is right view that is noble, without leaks, supramundane, and a limb of the path. He who makes an effort to give up wrong view and take upon himself right view has right diligence. He who by means of mindfulness gives up wrong view and dwells taking right view upon himself has right mindfulness. These three phenomena revolve around right view. They are right view, right diligence, and right mindfulness. In the following example, right view comes first. Why does right view come first? When there is wrong thinking and one knows it is wrong thinking, it is already right view. When there is right thinking and one knows it is right thinking, it is also right view. What is wrong thinking? It is thinking that leads to desire, hatred, and harming. What is right thinking? Because there are two kinds of right thinking. There is right thinking in which not all the leaks have been stopped. it gives rise to merit, but still results in attachment. Then there is right thinking that is noble, in which the leaks have been stopped. It is supramundane and an element of the path. What is right thinking in which not all the leaks have been stopped? It is the thinking that leads to giving up desire, hatred, and harming. That is right thinking in which not all the leaks have been stopped. It gives rise to merit, but still results in attachment. What is right thinking that is noble, in which the leaks have been stopped? That is supramundane and an element of the path. It is logical reasoning, initial reflection, thinking, application of mind, implanting in mind, and formation of speech in someone whose mind is noble, whose mind has no leaks, who has been provided with the noble path and is practicing the noble path. That, bhikkhus, is right thinking that is noble, without leaks, supramundane, and an element of the path. He who makes an effort to give up wrong thinking and take upon himself right thinking has right diligence. He who by means of mindfulness gives up wrong thinking and dwells taking right thinking upon himself has right mindfulness. These three phenomena revolve around right thinking. They are right view, right diligence, and right mindfulness. In the following example, right view comes first. Why does right view come first? When there is wrong speech, and one knows it is wrong speech, it is already right view. When there is right speech, and one knows it is right speech, that is also right view. What is wrong speech? It is lying, slandering, harsh words, and frivolous conversation. What is right speech? Because there are two kinds of right speech. There is right speech in which not all the leaks have been stopped. Then there is right speech that is noble in which the leaks have been stopped. What is right speech in which not all the leaks have been stopped? It is abstention from lying, slandering, harsh words, and frivolous conversation. What is right speech in which the leaks have been stopped? It is holding back from, desisting, resisting, and abstaining from the four kinds of wrong speech in someone whose mind is noble, whose mind has no leaks, who has been provided with the noble path, and who is practicing the noble path. In the following example, right view comes first. Why does right view come first? When there is wrong action, and one knows it is wrong action, it is already right view. When there is right action, and one knows it is right action, it is also right view. What is wrong action? It is the destruction of life, taking what is not given, and sexual misconduct. What is right action? Because there are two kinds of right action. There is right action in which not all the leaks have been stopped. Then there is right action that is noble, in which the leaks have been stopped. What is right action in which not all the leaks have been stopped? It is abstention from destroying life, from taking what is not given, and from sexual misconduct. What is right action in which the leaks have been stopped? It is holding back from, desisting, resisting, and abstaining from the three wrong bodily actions in someone whose mind is noble, whose mind has no leaks, who has been provided with the noble path, and who is practicing the noble path. He who makes an effort to give up wrong action and take upon himself right action has right diligence. He who by means of mindfulness gives up wrong action and dwells taking right action upon himself has right mindfulness. These three phenomena revolve around right action. They are right view, right diligence, and right mindfulness. In the following example, right view comes first. Why does right view come first? When there is wrong livelihood, and one knows it is wrong livelihood, it is already right view. When there is right livelihood, and one knows it is right livelihood, that is also right view. What is wrong livelihood? It is hypocritical and indistinct speaking, fortune-telling, trickery and covetousness, and wanting to make profit out of profit. What is right livelihood? Because there are two kinds of right livelihood. There is right livelihood in which not all the leaks have been stopped. Then there is right livelihood that is noble, in which the leaks have been stopped. What is the right livelihood in which not all the leaks have been stopped? It is when the noble disciple gives up wrong livelihood and makes his living by right livelihood. What is the right livelihood in which the leaks have been stopped? It is holding back from, desisting, resisting, and abstaining from wrong livelihood in someone whose mind is noble, whose mind has no leaks, who has been provided with the noble path, and who is practicing the noble path. He who makes an effort to give up wrong livelihood and take upon himself right livelihood has right diligence. He who by means of mindfulness gives up wrong livelihood and dwells taking right livelihood upon himself has right mindfulness. These three phenomena revolve around right livelihood. They are right view, right diligence, and right mindfulness. In the following example, right view comes first. Why does right view come first? Right thinking arises in someone who has right view. Right speech arises in someone who has right thinking. Right action arises in someone who has right speech. Right livelihood arises in someone who has right action. Right diligence arises in someone who has right livelihood. Right mindfulness arises in someone who has right diligence. Right concentration arises in someone who has right mindfulness. Right understanding arises in someone who has right concentration. And right liberation arises in someone who has right understanding. Therefore, because the path of the practitioner in training has 8 factors, and the path of the practitioner who is an arhat has 10 factors. In the following example, right view comes first. Why does right view come first? Wrong view is overcome in someone who has right view. All the other unwholesome, wrong states that arise dependent upon wrong view are also overcome. All the other wholesome states that arise dependent upon right view are practiced to fulfillment. Wrong thinking is overcome in someone who has right thinking, etc. Wrong speech is overcome in someone who has right speech, etc. Wrong action is overcome in someone who has right action, etc. Wrong livelihood is overcome in someone who has right livelihood, etc. Wrong diligence is overcome in someone who has right diligence, etc. Wrong mindfulness is overcome in someone who has right mindfulness, etc. Wrong concentration is overcome in someone who has right concentration, etc. Wrong understanding is overcome in someone who has right understanding, etc. Wrong liberation is overcome in someone who has right liberation, etc. Thus, because there are 20 factors supporting the wholesome and 20 factors supporting the unwholesome, this Dharma teaching on the Great 40 has been set in motion and cannot be turned back by any monk, Brahmin, God, Mara, Brahma, or anyone in the world. Majjhima Nikaya, 117. Discourse on Right View, Samaditi Sutta. This is what I have heard. At one time, the Lord was staying near Savati in the Jeddah Grove in Anathapindika's park. At that time, the Venerable Sariputta addressed the bhikkhus. Friend, the bhikkhus respectfully replied. The Venerable Sariputta said, how does a noble disciple practice right view, a view that is upright? How does he or she obtain unshakable confidence in the Dharma? How can he or she arrive at the true Dharma? Friend Sariputta, we have traveled a long way to be in your presence, and we are happy to learn the meaning of these words. Please explain your statements, and after we have heard your teachings, we will bear them in mind. Please listen, friends, and give your full attention to what I say. Friends, when a noble disciple understands the unwholesome and the roots of the unwholesome, as well as the wholesome and the roots of the wholesome, then that disciple has right view, a view that is upright. He or she is endowed with unshakable confidence in the Dharma and has arrived at the true Dharma. Friends, destroying life, taking what is not given, and sexual misconduct are unwholesome. Lying, slandering, harsh words, and frivolous conversation are unwholesome. Covetousness, ill will, and wrong views are unwholesome. The roots of the unwholesome are greed, hatred, and delusion. Abstaining from destroying life, from taking what is not given, and from sexual misconduct, abstaining from lying, slandering, harsh words, and frivolous conversation, not coveting, not harboring ill will, and practicing right view are wholesome. The roots of the wholesome are the absence of greed, hatred, and delusion. When a disciple understands the unwholesome and its roots, and the wholesome and its roots, he or she entirely transforms the tendency to greed, removes the tendency toward hatred, and discontinues the tendency toward the I am view. He or she transforms delusion, gives rise to understanding, and right now, in this very life, puts an end to suffering. Well said, friend, the delighted bhikkhu spoke, and asked, is there yet another teaching on how a disciple practices right view? Friends, when a noble disciple understands nourishment, the making of nourishment, the cessation of nourishment, and the path that leads to the cessation of nourishment, that disciple practices right view. Friends, there are four kinds of nourishment that support beings who have already come to be and those who are seeking a new existence. They are edible food, coarse or fine, the food of sense impressions, the food of intention, and the food of consciousness. Nourishment originates where greed originates, and nourishment ceases when greed ceases. The path that leads to the cessation of nourishment is the Noble Eightfold Path. When a disciple understands this, he or she entirely transforms these tendencies. Yet another teaching on right view is that when the noble disciple understands suffering, the making of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path leading to the cessation of suffering, he or she has right view. Birth, old age, sickness, death, grief, lamentation, pain, discontent, and agitation are suffering. Not to have what you want is suffering. In short, grasping the five skandhas is suffering. The creation of suffering is the thirst to be born again, which is associated with a delight in and attachment to the various pleasures found here and there. It is the thirst for the desire realm, the realm of being, and the realm of non-being. The stopping of suffering is disappearance of desire, the ending of ideas, the giving up of, letting go of, liberation from, and refusal to dwell in the object of desire. The path leading to the cessation of suffering is the Noble Eightfold Path. Another teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands old age and death, the making of old age and death, the cessation of old age and death, and the path leading to the cessation of old age and death, he or she has right view. Old age is the decrepitude of being in the various worlds of living beings. It includes broken teeth, gray hair, wrinkled skin, the dwindling of the life force, and the weakening of the sense organs. Death is the passing away of living beings from the various worlds of living beings, their shifting to other existences, their decomposition, disappearance, and death, the completion of their time, the disunion of the skandhas, and the laying down of the body. old age and death originate where birth originates. The cessation of birth is the cessation of old age and death. The path leading to the cessation of old age and death is the Noble Eightfold Path. Another teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands birth, the making of birth, he or she has right view. Birth is the arising of beings in the various worlds of beings, their appearance, rebirth, manifestation of the skandhas, and acquisition of sense organs and sense objects. Birth originates where becoming originates. The cessation of becoming is the cessation of birth. The path leading to the cessation of birth is the Noble Eightfold Path. Another teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands becoming, he or she has right view. There are three becomings: becoming in the world of desire, becoming in the world of fine matter, and becoming in the non-material world. Becoming originates where grasping originates, and ceases where grasping ceases. Another is that when a noble disciple understands grasping, he or she has right view. There are four kinds of grasping: the grasping of sensual desire, views, rules, and rituals, and a belief in a separate self. Grasping originates where thirst originates. Grasping ceases where thirst ceases. And the Noble Eightfold Path. A further teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands thirst, he or she has right view. There are six classes of thirst: thirst for forms, sounds, smells, tastes, touch, and objects of mind. Thirst originates where feelings originate, and thirst ceases where feelings cease. A further teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands feelings, he or she has right view. There are six classes of feelings: feelings that arise from eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. Feelings originate where contact originates and cease where contact ceases. A further teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands contact, he or she has right view. There are six classes of contact: eye contact, ear contact. Contact originates where the six sense organs and objects originate. A further teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands the six sense doors, he or she has right view. The six sense doors are the eye door, ear door. The six sense doors originate where the mind-body originates. A further teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands the mind-body, he or she has right view. The mind element consists of feelings, perceptions, volitions, contact, and mental attention. The body element consists of the four great elements and the form that results from the four great elements. The mind-body originates where consciousness originates. A further teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands consciousness, he or she has right view. There are six classes of consciousness: eye consciousness, ear consciousness. Consciousness originates where the impulses originate. A further teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands impulses, he or she has right view. There are three kinds of impulses: body impulses, speech impulses, and mind impulses. Impulses originate where ignorance originates. A further teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands ignorance, he or she has right view. Ignorance is the failure to recognize suffering, the making of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Ignorance originates where the leaks originate. A further teaching on right view is that when a noble disciple understands the leaks, he or she has right view. There are three leaks: the leak of sensual desire, the leak of being, and the leak of ignorance. The three leaks originate where ignorance originates. Majjhima Nikaya 9.